This is Jim Inkster coming today on Talk Louisiana. We'll visit with Bob Jacobson, a hydrologist and professional engineer. He has some thoughts about the continuing challenges with climate change and the Louisiana vanishing coast. Yesterday, the U.S. House passed a disaster relief bill that is pertinent to what we're talking about. We'll also visit with Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate. Mark, on a new poll showing Governor John Bel Edwards with an approval rating of 65%. What does this mean with the governor's election just 22 months away? Also, Mark Ballard will comment on Louisiana's congressional delegation voting almost unanimously in favor of the Trump tax bill, the lone exception being Democrat Cedric Richmond of New Orleans. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster, and good morning. Welcome to Talk Louisiana. 3 days before Christmas Day, Ali Baltazar is producing, and hope you're having a splendid holiday season with a fabulous one to come. 877-217-5757 is your number, and if you're dialing locally, 297-5633. We always like emails from you, and those are sent to talk@talklouisiana.org. We begin our discussion with Bob Jacobson. He's a hydrologist and a professional engineer, and his passion is trying to address the problems we're having in Louisiana. And long-term, maybe even short-term, there's no greater issue than our vanishing resources. We've got to make sure that we still have a state, at least the southern part of the state. Otherwise, we'll have some beachfront property in Baton Rouge very soon, Bob.
That's true. Thanks for having me on, Jim.
Well, it's good to talk with you, and this is an issue that you've made your passion in life. So you've seen through the years the stories emanate that we're losing a football field every hour, and people hear that, and I don't think they really believe it. Is it true?
Oh, sure. You know, I've been an avid coastal fisherman all my life, and yeah, those of us who go down to places like Leeville and Delacroix, absolutely.
Well, you note that a recent announcement by Moody's Investor Services forewarning of climate change impacts on credit is a resounding alert for us that the sustainability of our coast is important in any number of ways.
Exactly. Yeah, the financial implications are, I think, going to really double down the focus for those of us looking at ways to improve our sustainability. That's, you know, the buzzword. Sustainability and resiliency are the two words that you hear over and over again. And there's a lot of folks working on this issue, but you know, the framework for looking at these issues and understanding them is changing, and I hope to say improving rapidly. So those of us in the engineering profession can contribute to some good ideas here in the next 10 years as to how to really improve the sustainability and resiliency of our coastal communities and places like Baton Rouge that are subject, as we know, to potential climate change issues as well with the rainfall increases. We only have to look over at Houston to see, hey, there's some pretty phenomenal rainfall events that are associated with climate change, not just sea level rise. So,
well, where are we right now? We've been talking about this much for the last several years, and there are efforts that are ongoing, and there has been some money expended. But do we have enough to really fight the battle effectively?
Well, on the coastal front, I think you have to consider the problem in two phases. One is the ecosystem restoration, which is driven around our coastal industries that rely on the coast to provide economic benefits to the state. And then you have basic flood protection issues associated with communities. And both Baton Rouge and the coast are no different in that in the coming years we're going to see that flood protection issue is basically a question of insurance. It's a financial issue. You know, people have to evacuate to save lives away from flooding. That's the basic thrust of how to manage flood risk to human beings. But from a financial standpoint, it's all about flood insurance. And, of course, we in Louisiana are very focused on what happens to the flood insurance program.
Mm-hmm. Well, we saw a report today that we're one of eight states that actually lost population last year. And New Orleans, in all its glory, is the crown jewel of our state. If you were deciding to move there or somewhere else and you wanted to live on the lake, would that be a good move based on what we're seeing?
I think if Lloyd's of London were to take over insuring folks in New Orleans or reinsuring folks in New Orleans, the folks in New Orleans would have it pretty good. I think the levee system around New Orleans, which I'm really familiar with, is making that community probably as resilient or more resilient than a lot of places around Houston. I think it's a lot of the outlying communities, some on the North Shore like Slidell. There's portions of Slidell that have a tremendous problems. Obviously, places on the West Bank that are outside of that system. Places in Lower Livingston and Ascension Parish that have significant mm-hmm. potential risks. And I think as people become more acquainted in the years to come of what real costs of flood insurance are, regardless of whether they continue to have subsidized flood insurance through the NFIP, that's going to change a lot of practices and a lot of emphasis on finding solutions that are going to really lower the cost of, you know, what we're going to see as the private cost of flood insurance in the future.
We're visiting with hydrologist and professional engineer Robert Jacobson, better known as Bob, and he has made this his passion, and his commitment to the coast is echoed by many others. There's a group that is quite substantial of people like you who are out there on the front lines trying to make this work.
I've known a lot of the professionals in the business for some time. Some of the folks at CPRA have been colleagues of mine for two decades, and they're all fine gentlemen, have equal passions for not just solving problems about the coast, but they enjoy the coast. They treasure it. So it's mm-hmm. you know, myself and a lot of colleagues are you know, very interested in this problem and in trying to help our fellow Louisianians do the best we can.
How much is climate change a factor?
Well, I think we acknowledge that climate's changing and sea level rise is occurring, and all the best estimates say it's going to continue to accelerate. And I think if you know, we're conservative in the traditional mm-hmm. sense of the word conservative, we want to try to be cautious about that problem and take it seriously. And while there's some uncertainty, you know, we should leave adequate margins for uncertainty and start addressing the problem as we're being told it's coming.
And quite often when we discuss climate change, we get into arguments about what's causing it.
Right, right.
Is it possible to discuss the issue without going there?
Well, I think we, you know, our footprint, our carbon footprint here in Louisiana is pretty significant, but then we're the place where that carbon is going to be processed into petrochemicals and all those things. So I think from a national standpoint, you know, there's certain things that the country looks to Louisiana to take care of, and we do, regardless of the fact that we do have a little bit higher carbon footprint. But I think in the future, you know, obviously autonomous vehicles and a lot of other things are going to keep changing. I think the current forecast for a lot of carbon emissions are showing the U.S. is actually doing not too bad a job as a whole. You know, per capita, will Louisiana always lead the country in carbon footprints? Probably so, as long mm-hmm. as we're the place the country wants to have produce petrochemicals.
Yesterday, the U.S. House of Representatives passed an $81 billion disaster recovery bill. Louisiana will get some of that money, according to Congressman Garrett Graves, who was mm-hmm. with us yesterday, estimates around $600 million. That's real money. Mm-hmm. Will that help?
Well, disaster recovery is sort of an after-the-fact aspect of the problem. I think certainly it'll help, and certainly when we have a disaster, we want as much help as we can get, as does everybody in the country when they have a disaster, like California with their fires. But I think my profession and my colleagues, we're interested in reducing catastrophes and problems, and from the standpoint of financial impacts and impacts to people's homes and property, you know, we need to understand what these flood risks are. So one of the pushes myself and our colleagues are looking at is trying to communicate to everybody what their real flood risk is. You live in the Garden District, as does Garrett, but it'd be important for you guys to know what the cost of flooding is for your house. Those of us who live on Highland Road, some of us know flood insurance is pretty cheap, but it actually might be the real cost might be cheaper. My brother-in-law just bought a policy for $400 a year, I'm sorry. But it really might only cost 80 or 90. If that was the real cost, you'd like to know that. On the other hand, we have places where people are looking at buying a house, mm-hmm. and they think the cost of flood insurance might be $1,000 or $2,000 a year, but it might really be $5,000 or $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 a year. So those are the kind of things that can impact some really important decisions, like these development decisions that are coming up on Jones Creek, is what's the real cost of flood insurance for a place like that? And let's make some good decisions, mm-hmm. not just about development, but about building flood control and things that can reduce the cost of flood insurance.
So many areas last year, though, flooded that were not in flood zones. How does that happen, other than it being the so-called thousand-year flood?
Well, the NFIP is an antiquated, obsolete system. It's 50 years old. It's a framework that's based upon delineating only one level of flooding. What people really need to know, and really it should be almost transparent, the way your fire insurance works is you don't know what the real cost of fire risk is to your house, but you know that you have a policy that basically covers it. And the government puts in fire hydrants in your neighborhood at a density that's optimized to reduce the cost of your fire insurance. So it's been that way for decades and decades. What's coming in the next 10 years is the ability with science and hazard analysis, without getting too much in the nerd of it, that's going to allow us to make really good decisions about optimizing flood control and flood risk. What people need to know is what their flood risk is. And the way you find out that is what's the real cost of the insurance. And then you decide to buy somewhere or not buy somewhere. Builders decide to build somewhere or not build somewhere, because those costs become transparent in the cost of the insurance. The flood maps are antiquated. Don't use the flood maps. Everybody in Louisiana should have flood insurance, because anywhere where it rains, there's a risk of flooding.
Now, in California, Governor Jerry Brown has said the wildfires are the new norm, that this is not going to be an aberration. It's going to be a continuing issue. In Louisiana, the flood of last year, the so-called thousand-year flood, is that the new normal?
I think we need to look across the entire northern Gulf of Mexico. We share a same climate region everywhere from Houston over towards the panhandle of Florida, and we can look at events that happen anywhere in that area and say they could just as easily happen here. And that includes a Harvey. That includes August 2016. And we need to understand that's the reality of where we live. And it possibly could be getting worse, and we need to be prepared for that in making decisions about individually buying homes, where we build our businesses, et cetera.
Your number is 877-217-5757. Or if you'd like to send an email, talk@talklouisiana.org. Bob Jacobson's the guest, and we're back after this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana on 89.3 WRKF. Hope you're having a great holiday season. Bob Jacobson is with us, hydrologist and professional engineer, and his passion is the Louisiana coast. And you've been addressing these issues for how many years, Bob?
Oh, close to 35 now.
35 years. Bob's an avid runner, and I'll give it 61. You're getting ready for the Boston Marathon, and you run sub 4 hour marathons, right?
Well, I owe it all to Jenny Peters and the folks at Varsity and all the friends that I have there, that we kind of spur each other on. It wouldn't have happened without them, I can tell you that.
Remember when the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, said he ran a marathon in 4 hours, turned out to be five?
Remember that?
Yeah, if somebody fibs about their marathon time, will they fib about other things?
Oh, it's possible to extrapolate, I think, on that regard. Yeah,
but if you're doing it in less than 4 hours, then you're moving. That's what is that, an average mile?
I'm about 8:40 on a marathon. 8:50.
8:50 for 26.2 miles. Let's not forget the .2.
Yeah,
and that is strong. And what is it about this culture that people just get so immersed in? You've got two passions, the coast and running.
Yeah, it's a bit of an achievement bug. The feedback and the endorphins you get from making one goal kind of spur you on to another. We're all like that. I tell you what, it's not unique to me. Anybody that comes out and gets involved with Jenny's running group, and you stick it out for a little while, the bug will bite you pretty much. It's not too many of us are immune to it. And like I said, I owe it all to the group, because it really, you know, if we are born to run, as some people like to say, it's sort of a pack mentality. You kind of all end up doing it.
I remember Tom Brokaw saying you really learn a lot about a place when you run, because you see things up close that you otherwise would not. And because of your passion for this, you've learned a lot about Louisiana and some of the challenges we're facing, I'm sure.
Well, one day we'll talk about the lakes, because that's somewhere we run all the time, as I'm sure everybody who's around the lakes knows. They see us running there. So we can talk about how to fix the lakes one day, too.
The LSU lakes?
Yes, sir. That would be another day, though.
It's beautiful, but there are problems, aren't there?
Well, it's a swamp, you know. We try to make a swamp into a beautiful lake, so we got some challenges there.
Got some challenges, but we don't want to lose the lakes.
Right.
I don't think anybody's calling for the lakes to be paved over.
No. That would not be what we want. We want our lake. We have a lot of swamp in Louisiana, but we don't have too many pretty lakes.
You know, Huey Long's given credit for that. Is that legitimate? Was that his idea?
Well, all I know is that the creation of it date back to the Depression and Conservation Service and all that.
Well, that was when he was governor.
So I wouldn't be surprised if Huey had some fingers in that, because he had fingers in a lot of things.
877-217-5757. Bob Jacobson is addressing the coastal issues that are prevailing in our state and certainly in the area where we are, and even more so in the area south of where we are. Ray in Prairieville. Hi, Ray. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Thanks for taking my call, Jim. I want to congratulate Mr. Jacobson on his knowledgeable comments about both climate change and water level. But I'd also like to ask him if what he feels are state government's going to do about some of these things. The Comate River Diversion Canal is still nowhere, even though we spent $20 million. And I really think that we need a pumping station at the end of the Bayou Man Shack to pump the excess water comes back from the Amy into the Mississippi.
Good thoughts. Thank you, Ray.
That's a great topic. I know a lot of people have brought up in the wake of the flood some additional measures that could be done to reduce risk from the overall AMEET and the backwater problems. You know, what we as a profession are wrestling with is how to get state government to get all the information they need to see really how much projects like that could cost and how many people could benefit, whether it's a Comate diversion, a pump station, you know, redredging the AMEET River, or even projects along the coast. But just real quick, what our state really needs is a push from folks like you to say, hey, I know the cost of my flood insurance. I would like something to happen to reduce the cost of that flood insurance. You know, if there's a New Year's resolution I'd wish for everybody to have, it's to figure out what their real cost of flood insurance is and for everybody to buy flood insurance. It's kind of like property insurance for fires. You know, once you kind of have confronting your property insurance bill, you're willing to pay your local government to build another fire station and improve mm-hmm. the water pressure in your lines. But there's only so much you're willing to do, because you know if, you know, more than that's not really going to reduce the cost of your insurance, you don't want to have it. So all these great projects that we have as ideas, we need to figure out if they'll really work. And believe it or not, there's a lot of information we need to pull together, and I'm sure we're not going to be able to depend on the federal government to do this anymore. That's the problem mm-hmm. with the Comate Diversion Canal and any other project we'd like to do. We're going to have to come up with the money to do these kinds of things ourselves, and obviously our state with its fiscal situation is wrestling with that. That money has to come from people who are paying insurance, whether it's fire insurance for new property insurance for new fire stations, or it's people who are paying flood insurance and they want to see new pump stations. So that's the short end of that, is we as taxpayers and insurance payers are going to have to push our officials to say, hey, find us some solutions so we can reduce the cost of our insurance.
877-217-5757 is your number for Bob Jacobson, hydrologist and professional engineer. And we're going to hear from Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief as well. But Bob has made the coastal issues his passion, and I've heard Insurance Commissioner Jim Donilon say more than once that quite often people will try to go out and buy insurance when there's a hurricane 100 miles from the coast, and they won't let you do it then. These are things that need to be addressed now rather than later if you want to address them. And I've at first started working at the Louisiana Radio Network in 1983 when the big flood came with the Comate River and the Amite River. And like many, I thought that had been addressed, but we found out otherwise, didn't we? So are we going to just ignore this for another 35 years and see what happens?
Well, floods do tend to dissipate from our memory. That's why going back to biblical times, we think people kept wanting to tell those narratives so that the next generation would remember that a big one can always come. You know, that's part of the message of flood stories and flood narratives. But really and truthfully, flooding as a financial disaster, we need to be big boys and big girls and pull mm-hmm. up our big boys and big girl pants and understand that the federal government doesn't look like it's going to be able to help us out. And folks in Shreveport have flooding problems. Folks in Monroe have flooding problems. We can't ask them to subsidize our flood problems here in Baton Rouge. So we have to look at what's cost effective for us to do. And I keep coming back to that point about flood insurance. There's a lot of information that says our decisions over the last 50 years have been bad. They've been distorted by a program that was started 50 years ago, but now is obsolete. We know these maps don't work anymore. We need to have some better tools in the toolbox. And I think our profession is going to help develop that, and we can talk about that some more another time.
All right. Now, there's a master plan addressing the coastal erosion. Is that sufficient to if the plan is implemented?
You know, the master plan has been improved every time it's been done. I've been familiar with the folks working on it. It goes through a five-year cycle, and it's getting better and better. They're actually doing some great work with some of these tools they need to make some decisions. You know, there's no problem that more billions of dollars probably wouldn't help to fix. But, you know, they've got to continue to wrestle with this problem. Do we spend money to improve our ecosystem habitat, which is where the BP-type money is supposed to come? And we're supposed to keep our menhaden and our trout and our crabs and our oysters rolling, or do we spend it on some flood protection projects? That's a wrestle. There's only so many dollars to go around, and there's a long coast to try to keep sustaining.
Well, and there's some who say, look, at some point you just have to throw in the towel and accept the inevitable. But we're not there yet, I hope.
I think there's a tendency sometimes to go to the extremes. Oh, it's not a problem. We just need to fix it. Let's just start digging and doing projects. And there's the other extreme that says, you know, it's hopeless. You know, let's just all move away. You know, reality's in somewhere in between. There's some folks that are going to have to move, but there's some projects that we can do. There's some places that we can continue to sustain that our grandchildren can go fish, and we ought to be doing that.
877-217-5757. Bob Jacobson, hydrologist and professional engineer and coastal expert. We will talk with him some more, and then we will hear from Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate, and much to catch up with him. It's been a busy news week as we approach Christmas Day, 3 days away. 877-217-5757. We're back after this pause for the news with Karen Henderson on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. A few more minutes with Bob Jacobson, hydrologist and professional engineer, and then we'll hear from Mark Ballard, the Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate, largest newspaper in Louisiana. Betsy in the Garden District. Betsy, you're on with Bob Jacobson. Hi, Betsy.
Hi. I have a question. We did not flood last year, and technically I think we're considered an X zone. Y'all may have discussed this already. Would I be foolish in purchasing flood insurance for the future?
Betsy, I believe probably, good question, that flood insurance probably would only cost you a few hundred dollars a month.
A year.
I'm sorry, correct. I think you probably understand in your neighborhood where your house is relative to your neighboring houses, and there's probably, you know, some type of rainfall amount, like if what happened in Watson in 16, 30 inches of rain and 2.5 days, if that fell on your backyard, would it be able to get around your house and go into the street, or would it come up your back porch into your den? And whether $400 is too much money for you, or whether you have enough set aside to, in case something would happen, you'd be able to take care of the new flooring. So that's what it really boils down to for you, for a lot of folks. Certainly, people who go out and buy a brand new home, or somebody who's looking at buying a home in that new subdivision in Jones Creek, ought to really take a hard look at that. In that location, even if they build houses just above what's called the BFE, the base flood elevation, there's a significant risk of having a couple, 2-3 feet of water in a brand new house in that subdivision that's proposed. And those people who buy those homes in that area need to really take a look at what their future cost of flood insurance is going to be. And that's true for all of us.
David in Atlanta. Thank you, Betsy. David, you're on with Bob Jacobson.
Good morning, gentlemen. Bob Marshall has written at NOLA.com, by the end of the century, just about everything south of U.S. 90 will likely be underwater. The Republican delegation in Washington has gone right along with President Trump, essentially blaming the I think Trump has said climate change is a Chinese hoax. Well, carbon dioxide is a proven greenhouse gas, and the Republican legislators, they want federal money for coastal erosion in Louisiana, but they won't address climate change. Now, we could spend all the money in the world on coastal restoration. One good hurricane comes along, all that money will be flushed down the commode, and I just think it's unbelievable how the elected politicians from a state that has so much to lose, so much at risk, cannot recognize science, real, proven, verifiable, observable science.
All right. Your thoughts, Bob. Thank you, David.
David, that's a good point. Yeah, Bob, and I've known Bob a long time, another good New Orleanian.
He was a guest on this show.
Yeah.
Recently.
Yeah. Certainly, the science and the policy and the engineering analysis shows that a lot of people are going to have to move out of the coast. There's no question about that. In terms of what can be sustained either because of for ecosystem productivity or what can be sustained in terms of places where flood insurance isn't so expensive you can't afford to live somewhere, that's part of what we need to be figuring out. But you're right. A lot of people are going to have to move. And if we get 2 to 3 feet of sea level rise in the next 50 years, there are a lot of places that are going to be underwater. There's no doubt about that. And that is science that we all have to really – and I think you make an excellent point. All of our politicians and of all our policy people need to acknowledge that that's a scenario that looks more and more realistic. And as engineers, we're supposed to be realistic.
Bob, it's good to see you, and good luck in the Boston Marathon, and let's talk again. This is an issue that has relevance and will for as long as you and I are alive and beyond.
Season's greetings to everybody, and really seriously consider buying flood insurance as a New Year's resolution, everybody.
Thank you, Bob. Mark Ballard is with us, the Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate, and Mark, usually this time of the year, it's kind of a yawner as far as news, but we had plenty of it this week, both nationally and locally.
Indeed we did, but it is quiet here today at the state capitol. It seems like most people are taking off early for their vacations or for their Christmas holidays.
Mm-hmm. And when I say Capitol Bureau Chief, you're at the Capitol a lot, including on December 22nd, 3 days before Christmas. Mark is in the house that Huey built, and I would suspect you don't have a whole lot of company today. The guards may outnumber the people there.
Yeah, it looks that way. The guards all kind of give you a withering glance saying, why are you here? Can't I go home?
Well, Mark is here to talk with us. And yesterday, the U.S. House of Representatives passed an $81 billion disaster recovery bill, and Garrett Graves, congressman from Baton Rouge, says the state could receive about $600 million in recovery money through the bill.
And that hits about what the governor says is needed for continued recovery from the August 2016 floods. We're having to split this with the hurricane victims from Harvey and Maria and all the ones that came over the summer time. But right now, I mean, it got past the U.S. House, but it's before the U.S. Senate, and it may not make it through the U.S. Senate. I mean, it's got a tough row to hoe there.
Well, these votes in the Senate are close, almost always along party lines of late when it involves a big issue. And Cassidy and Kennedy, our two U.S. senators, William Morgan Cassidy and John Neely Kennedy, they vote in unison on practically everything, and that's not unusual since they are both now conservative Republicans. They haven't always been that way, but that's what they are now. And this week, they both voted for the tax bill that passed Congress. Right now in Louisiana, they're not alone. Every member of the congressional delegation voted for it as well, with the exception of Cedric Richmond of New Orleans, Mark.
That's true. I mean, it was pretty much a party line vote, as best that we can see. And the Republicans are trying to sell this as a middle-class income tax relief, and the Democrats are saying, you know, wait, you may get $1,000, $1,200, depending on your tax status, but that down the road, we're talking about $1 trillion or more in deficits. We're talking about a rollback for the middle class, while the corporate and the higher-income people will be able to keep their tax relief.
Today in the New York Times, the front page says the Trump administration said Thursday that 8.8 million people had signed up for the health insurance through the Affordable Care Act's federal marketplace, which is a surprisingly large number, only slightly lower than the total in the last open enrollment period, which was twice as long and heavily advertised. And the numbers defy the stories from the administration that Obamacare is imploding. But in Louisiana, the numbers are different. In our state, as Ted Griggs reports on the front page of The Advocate, consumers who picked an Obamacare health plan for 2018 through the online federal marketplace plunged 22% last year to 111,373. Last year, 143,577. So for whatever reason, in Louisiana, we as a people were not as diligent in getting into the Obamacare process for 2018 as we were a year ago.
Well, I think that there's a couple reasons for that. I mean, the politics of it is only kind of one of them. But by expanding Medicaid, that there's been a smaller group that would be signing up for it. People that would have signed up for it in years past now go to Medicaid and can qualify for that. And so I think that that's showing a lot of what is happening here.
Okay. Well, a poll this week shows Governor John Bel Edwards, this one from Bernie Pinson out of Southern Media and Opinion Research, who's a good pollster, shows him at 65% approval. We're 22 months away from the election for governor in 2019. What does that mean, if anything?
Well, it is awfully early. That's something that you got to consider. I thought what was interesting about that poll was it was also showing that the governor is far ahead of his putative Republican rivals like John Kennedy and Steve Scalise. I think what it kind of shows or it kind of reflects is that this sort of chaos that's been going on in a national and in a state level has kind of an impact on the polls in that the governor has been kind of a steady hand on the tiller, if you will. I mean, as we go through the disasters, and he seems like, you know, a kind of a stabilizing force. And I think that that might have, and just my opinion, that that might have an impact on those poll numbers.
The poll shows, Mark, that 44% of Republicans right now support John Bel Edwards, at least find his work worthy of approval. And that is remarkable because he is the only Democrat standing as an office holder in statewide in Louisiana.
And I think so. And though the Republican Party, I mean, they already are attacking him and trying to undermine that support. But again, I think it goes back to him being a stabilizing force when we have all of this chaos going on, budgets that are $1 billion off, that sort of thing. I think after what we have been seeing on the national level, what we've seen on the statewide level, is that people are getting tired of all the chaos, and that they want something steady. And I think that that reaches out to a number of Republicans, not the far right wing, but a number of Republicans, as this state is the majority of.
Right. Now, the same survey from Bernie Pinsonat and Buster McKenzie shows John Kennedy at 51% approval rating and Bill Cassidy at 45%. Now, Bernie Pinsonat, used to work for Bennett Johnston, said if Bennett Johnston were ever at 51 or 45%, he would be worried. I don't know that Cassidy and Kennedy are particularly concerned about this right now.
Yeah, I don't think they need to be worried right now because this state elects statewide. We elect Republicans for the most part. And while those numbers aren't as good as the governor's are, they still are pretty good. And I think that Cassidy has a higher profile than Kennedy does, and that accounts for him having a lower number.
We'll be back after this pause with Mark Ballard of The Advocate. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us, 877-217-5757. Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate, is with us. And for a few more moments, we're discussing the numbers that are presented in the poll from Bernie Pinsonat, whose numbers over the last several years have been largely accurate. And this is a snapshot. Even Governor John Bel Edwards says he's not getting too excited about it. But right now, it shows him with a 65% approval rating. That's up from 54% in May, And John Kennedy, who may very well be his challenger, is at 51% positive and 39% negative. And Bill Cassidy, 45% positive, 44% negative. Before we get to the possible matchup of Kennedy and Edwards, the two Johns, Bill Cassidy, it appears right now, Mark, has taken somewhat of a bruising from his role in the health care debate.
Well, yeah, I think so. I think that's reflective in the numbers. I think that Cassidy's worry perhaps may be that he's going to get competition from the right, that there will be a very conservative Republican kind of taking a look at those numbers and saying, you know, I have a possibility.
So, well, yeah, if he's challenged from the right and the left, he could have some issues because we still have an open primary until further notice.
And he's a little more moderate than other Republicans in this state.
Right. So. 877-217-5757 and talk@talklouisiana.org. And that brings a question from Holly in South Downs about Louisiana's system with an open primary. Holly notes that a few years ago we did away with it for congressional elections, and then we promptly went back to it. Would this be something a Republican-dominated legislature would look at again?
Well, I think that the legislature did that primarily so that it could clear the field for David Vitter in that Senate election right after he had apologized for some unnamed problem that he had, which apparently had to do with prostitutes. But that I think once that happened, that was why they went back to the open primary, so that he would not be facing what he faced in the gubernatorial election. So unless the Republicans have chosen someone that they want to run above all others, I don't think we're going to see that.
Mm-hmm. Now, as we look to 2019 and the governor's election, Ralph Abraham of Monroe, the congressman from North Louisiana, a doctor and a veterinarian, by the way, has given some indication that he's looking at the race. But so has John Kennedy, who is a U.S. senator and a guy who has almost universal name recognition in Louisiana. Bernie Pinsonat said yesterday, Mark Ballard, that he thought that every candidate will have to look at Kennedy, and if he decides to run, then that means there won't be any company on the Republican side. That's Bernie talking, but he may be right.
He may be right, and I don't think that Kennedy's going to get in if he's going to have to be fighting, you know, a tough campaign from the right or the left on that, as far as the Republicans go. And I think that he's right on that. If indeed he decides to go, I mean, he's also one of those guys that, you know, flirts with it and does so for a long time, and then in the end, you know, more often than not, decides not to. And that may be what's going on this time.
Yep, but if he wants to be governor, and I think he does, this will be probably his last best shot. He's 66, and that means if he waits another 4 years, he'll be 72. And also, he has the luxury of knowing that even if he were to lose, he's still a U.S. senator for the next 3 years at a minimum. So the timing is very good for him. And he, this week, Mark, seized the moment in his interrogation of this judicial nominee for the District of Columbia, Matthew Peterson, who also is a graduate of the University of Virginia Law School, the same school that produced one John Neely Kennedy. Peterson, he had a terrible experience being interrogated by our junior senator.
And I think we've talked about this before, is that that he takes that serious, the advise and consent role that he had, but that was great video of him just kind of questioning, you know, do you know basic trial level policies that go on in federal and state level courts? You know, had you done any trials? He hadn't. You know, how many depositions had he done? And apparently less than five. I mean, he was being selected to be on a trial level federal bench, and yet he's not really participated in. And I think that Professor Kennedy, remember, he taught constitutional law at LSU, I think he just took him to task by asking very simple questions that really he should have known. Now, to be fair, not every lawyer is a trial lawyer. You know, a lot of them do all sorts of, you know, corporate type of work and do contracts. And the question needs to be raised, you know, should they be handling trials in the federal bench? And apparently he thought, the candidate thought that maybe not.
Mm-hmm. Well, at last report, that video that has gone viral has had 7 million, 7 million views. So John Kennedy, who is a freshman senator, by the way, he has to be one of the best-known U.S. senators in Washington right now. He already has a magical name, but beyond that, he knows how to gain attention.
Well, I think the national press is discovering what we've always known down here, and that, you know, he's good for a ready, colorful quote, and in fact, a lot of the quotes that we see repeated in the New York Times and Politico are ones that are repurposed from what he was saying when he was a state treasurer and a candidate.
Repurposed, I like that. Today, Elizabeth Crisp, your colleague at The Advocate, reports that Louisiana is among 8 states to experience a decline in population in this year, and that is a disturbing trend. We've noted before that Louisiana is, other than West Virginia, lost more population. When I say lost, we really haven't lost population. We just haven't gained as much as other states and other southern states, for that matter. I'm talking Mississippi and Arkansas. So something is going on in our state that's not so good when it comes to getting people to move here and keeping some of our best and brightest to stay.
It's been a long problem. It kind of changed a little bit after Hurricane Katrina. Governor Jindal would step in front of that, saying, you know, that the increase in population was because of him, but it is actually a whole lot of people returning home after Hurricane Katrina. And so I think that the problems that the census showed in its report yesterday was actually has been accumulating over decades of time, and you know, Christmas time is a time where folks are coming home. My daughter, who could not find work here but found work in New England, has come home to visit us, and I think that that's kind of where we're going in the future.
The governor has set a January 19th deadline to decide whether to have a special session. And Mark, I know you're not all that enthused about yet another special session, but the governor has said, look, there's no point in doing this unless we have a consensus. Is it possible to get that done by the 19th of January?
Well, first let me say, I'm sitting in the state capitol right before a 4-day holiday. So, you know, enthused is, you know, I'm going to be here whether they have a special session or not. But right now, the Republicans are still kind of working on what their problem, what their solutions might be, and whether they can get this done by January 19th is kind of up in the air. I kind of predict that what we'll see end up seeing is you know, him extending that deadline a couple of times, but he has to call a special election session 2 weeks before it convenes. So there may be some wiggle room on that, but so the underlying question is that the Republican House members are meeting, and they're continuing to meet, and will meet a couple of more times between now and the session. But they have yet to kind of glom on to a particular a plan or policies that that they can all agree on, that they can work with.
And it takes 70 votes to get a tax, and lawmakers say that is just almost insurmountable in this day and time.
Well, I think that you, in the House, I think what we're seeing is there's a fragmented Republican Party in the House, and you have about 20 or so that are kind of, you know, the gang of no, and it doesn't matter what, they're going to vote no against it. Then you have about 20 or so that are, they're conservative, but they're more practical. There's the ones that are following Speaker Barra and the House Majority Leader Lance Harris. then you have a handful of kind of free spirits in the Republican Party that are willing to do it. So if you get the Democrats and then like one of these sections or a couple of these sections to go along with it, then you'll find enough to get that 70 votes. And I guess that's the trick. It's all kind of vote counting and mathematics. And so far they haven't found the secret formula.
Well, thank you so much, Mark Ballard. Have a Merry Christmas, you and your beautiful bride, Donna Britt, and we'll be back for the holidays, and I hope you have a great Christmas. Until then, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.